Hi everyone, welcome to People I Almost Know. I'm Michelle, and my guest today is Rob Shepard, who I literally thought was named Rob Shep until this interview. I almost know Rob from Twitter, at Rob Shep, and I followed quite a few links back to his blog, robshep.com, so you can see where I got that from. But this interview was a special request from Ricky Anderson, who wrote to me that Rob Shepard is a pastor and a great guy, and he is not afraid of anything, and that I should talk to him. And he said that Rob would say yes, and Rob did say yes, so here we go. Okay. And this is why I don't do this, because I'm laughing already. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. Well, before we get started for real, I wanted to see, can you introduce yourself to our listeners and just tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I would love to. My name is Rob Shepard, and I live in Hampton, Virginia, known as the 757 in our part. And Hampton, if you're not familiar with it, is both the greatest athletes who have ever served prison time.
Is that true?
Allen Iverson and Michael Vick are both from just a few miles away from where I live. And so that's our claim to fame. I'm a pastor. I've been in ministry for years, but I started a church a little over a year ago. It was a church plant, and we meet on Sunday night, and we've got about 150 people now coming.
Wow.
It's a little exciting church plant. Fun to be around. I'm married to Monica, and we've been married for 12 years, coming up on August 4th.
Oh.
And we have twins, and a boy and a girl, Reese and Hayden, and they are 2 years old.
That's very nice.
Yeah, so basically my life's really boring.
It doesn't sound boring. It sounds busy.
Yeah, there's always something going on.
Well, this is the first time I've called somebody in an area code that I recognize. Because I'm also here in Virginia, and I told you in the email that, like, in blog terms, we're just in each other's backyard, you know?
Yeah, which is really cool.
Well, here's the question that I was wondering about is, on your Rob's Dictionary, on your blog, where you listed might could, and you said that you ran up against people who didn't know what that meant. So I was wondering, like, to me, like, I guess I came up with stuff like that, and I didn't realize that I was Southern until I met, you know, until I kind of got to be a grown-up and met other people who, you know, from different parts of the globe.
Yeah.
So do you consider yourself to be Southern?
I'm kind of a mutt when it comes to all that. My dad was military, and so we moved all around. And Virginia, when I go, like, further south and tell people I live in Virginia, they act like we're Northern. And when I go, like, up north and tell people I'm from Virginia, they act like I'm from the south. So I think Virginia is, like, the redheaded stepchild of America, and nobody wants to claim them. so I wouldn't say that I am, like, deep south, but I definitely would say I have some southern roots.
Well, you were military. I mean, at what point did you come to Virginia? Your family was military, right? Your dad?
My dad was military, and we moved here when I was in seventh grade.
Oh, so that's kind of early.
Yeah. And before that, everywhere we lived, we'd only lived there for about 2 or 3 years. So this was the first place that I ever lived more than just a couple years.
Wow. What was that like?
It was both good and bad. I think being in the military, we would move to military bases, and I would have friends that were either getting ready to move or then we would move. So most of my friendships only lasted for about 6 months to a year because someone was always moving.
Wow.
And so, the good thing about that was I've been able to become friends with people pretty quickly. Like, it doesn't take me long to trust people or feel like, oh yeah, we're good friends, and I like to just dive in and build relationships. And then moving here, it really, by about 9th to 10th grade, it really became weird to say, I've actually known some people for a few years now, more than just a few months or a year. So that it was really cool, and I still have friendships that You know, my best friend is from eighth grade, and so it's been a cool thing.
Well, that is cool. That's, you know, well, I'm up near Washington. I'm about 50 miles, or where I grew up, was about 50 miles from Washington. So I have that same Virginia experience, and I didn't know, being a little further south than me, if it was the same, because I sometimes I think of myself as a Southern person, and since I've started podcasting and I hear my speech patterns and I hear my words that come out of my mouth, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Michelle, you have the Southern slur. You know, you put an A where a lot of O's should be, you know, but I'm so close to Northern Virginia that I often forget, you know, I think of us as Northern.
Right.
But yeah, that's interesting.
Well, if you think you sound Southern at all, you should talk to Tyler Tarver. Have you experienced his blogger?
I have, yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. I have listened to them on their podcast, and he has a podcast that I've listened to many times. And it took me a while to acclimate my ears to his accent.
Yeah, I mean, you'll feel like a Yankee when you listen to him.
Well, here's what I want to ask you next is about your blog. And, so just tell me all about your blog. You have written down that your tagline is Random Thoughts from a Transparent Pastor. And you said your life's an open book, and you're pretty transparent, and you're also random.
Yep.
So it's everything.
It. Yeah. Yeah. Well, my blog, really started from watching the movie Marley and Me. I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
No. Movie?
Yeah, the dog movie, yeah, with Owen Wilson.
Okay.
If you like animals, it's really sad, and you'll cry ugly tears. So if you don't like ugly cries, don't rent it. But okay. we watched that movie in the theaters, and there's a part in the movie where he wasn't really interested in becoming, or like in writing, but he got a job at a paper, and he started writing about the adventures that his dog would take him on, and it was really funny, and he ended up getting a big readership, and I left that movie, and I was like, you know, I really like that idea of just writing random things and taking stories that I've experienced and making them funny, and so I had a small group at the time, and I started trying to do that in my weekly email. And they kept emailing me back and saying, we don't care. Like, why are you telling us this stuff?
Yeah. Are you kidding?
No. And so from there, I read a book by Mark Batterson called In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day. And I started researching Mark Batterson, and I saw that he had a blog, and it was really big. And that led me to read a couple other blogs. And I thought, well, you know, this is kind of what I was looking to do. And so I started just writing. And I read multiple people's posts on how to have a successful blog, and almost everyone said the way to do it is to pick a theme and stick to it.
Yeah.
And, even if it's like, you know, cats or clean kitchens, or just if it's something random, just pick a theme and go with it. And I thought hard. I was like, man, I just don't know what my theme would be, and I am interested and into a lot of things. And so just started being random with posts, and then more and more people started kind of commenting on how shocked they were about the transparency, and I wasn't really intentionally trying to do anything. I just was trying to share life and write, and I read, I don't know if you've read Brian Elaine's book, The 31 Days to Blogging Mojo.
Not yet, no.
Great book, you should check it out. But Brian, one of the things that he talked about in the book was having a tagline, and so I just kind of put those things together that I haven't been able to find out a theme yet, so I'm very random, and I also keep hearing people say that I'm transparent, so that's how all that came about.
Well, that's really interesting, and I hear the same thing over and over too, and I, you know, struggle with that a little bit mentally, and the fact that I, not only do I can't think of a theme, but
right.
But I don't want to restrict myself to one thing either. I want to write about whatever I want to write about. But I also, one of the questions I had to you, if you're a pastor, and I was going to ask you, like, some pastors write kind of a combination personal slash church blog. And I saw today when I looked on, I saw that you did have a post that looked like it was to your congregation. Yeah. Do you do that a lot, or is it mostly personal, or what?
Yeah, it's mostly personal. I write 5 days a week, and then I was doing every Saturday a post just to my church. I've been slacking on that a little bit. But if I'm going to post something directly to the church, it'll just kind of be Saturday. I keep everything else. It's pretty random, and Monday through Friday.
Well, here's the other question I had. Is in your bio, you said that you're, and you actually mentioned already your wife in the beginning, but you, in your bio, you said that you're a full-time husband and you're a pastor in your spare time. So,
yeah.
How does that, you know, how does that work for you? Like, tell me everything there is about you being a pastor. Start at day one. No.
I don't know. I really don't even know what I meant by that line. I think I was just trying to be a little bit witty, but my idea really is that, I really do love my wife and, love my family. And, I love God. I absolutely love God, but I don't want the church to, and me working at the church to take away from, me having a family. And so, we try to be pretty intentional with family time and, spending time with each other and making sure and setting boundaries. The crazy thing is about, it's not the work of planning services that takes so much time. It does take time, but what takes so much time is that people's worlds fall apart, and when they fall apart, they want their pastor right then and there. And so, you know, in their mind, they're not thinking about, well, you know, Rob hasn't seen his family all day. You know, they're thinking it's 8 o'clock, and my grandpa has cancer. I need help. We've tried to set some boundaries and just, but my church is not my life, and my identity is not in my church. I really want my identity to be in Jesus, and really want, I really want my, you know, to my family to be a big priority. And so that's kind of what I was just meaning by that.
Well, let me ask you this. As a pastor, how do you separate being leader of the church from that relationship with Jesus? Because, you know, you're... I don't know if I phrased that right, but how do you separate those out?
Yeah.
If you're the leader.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if there's an easy answer or a clear cut answer. I know though, at the end of the day, if I say no to helping a church member, or meet their needs, that most of them will forgive me or will end up going to another church where they're, I mean, we have a million churches in America. Mm-hmm. If I constantly let down my kids and my wife and show them that they're not a big part of my life, I could ruin their lives, and not just ruin their lives from saying that dad doesn't care about them, but, I could jack them up spiritually, because I think we all know pastors who have run away from God and the church because they had a dad that, you know, wasn't there or didn't have time for him, or, you know, they ended up having daddy issues. And so, I think there's a difference between saying this is a season of our life. And, you know, if someone calls and, you know, they just died, well, that's definitely different than someone calling and, you know, I need to talk to you now. My boyfriend broke up with you. And, that, you know, that's the type of thing that we say, hey, well, let's go talk to a small group leader, or if you really need to meet, you know, I'd love to talk with you tomorrow. But, you know, you're not on the edge of death, or, you know, this isn't a life threatening thing. So, we have to set some boundaries. And my church is incredible. They really respect that, and I mean, I think they get it that I have a family, and I'm not, you know, I'm not different than them. They want to spend time with their family, and they also understand that even though we're a small church, you know, you have 150 people. Well, that's a lot of people to shepherd and overlook. And so, I, you know, most people are really awesome and really get it.
Well, and really, it should be 150 people that are there for each other.
Right, exactly.
Not just one man there for everybody. Do you know what I mean?
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting that you, the whole thing is interesting to me. And I've never actually asked a pastor any questions, but you know, you brought to mind some of the stories that you hear, like you say, not just of the kids that pastors' kids that rebel and go away, but sometimes pastors or preachers, who focus on the, importance,
yeah.
But they focus on, what is the right word? My mind is gone, but not just the importance, but the glamour or what have you of the job.
Okay.
So that
yeah.
It's not about, it stops being about the people. And
right.
I think that, that would be maybe a pitfall too.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a conversation with my dad that kind of goes along with this, but my dad and my parents both go to our church. I talked to them about how, you know, there are times when I feel bombarded by emails or just the pressure of, you know, my life's falling apart, help me out right now. And I made a statement to my dad, I really do get why some of these pastors at mega churches and some of the more celebrity pastors set up all these barriers that you just can't get to them. Like, they don't put their email on websites, and if you email them, you're talking to their secretary. And like, and I told him, like, I don't know if we're ever going to get that big, but there's got to be a way to still interact with people and not let them run all over you. I just don't want to set myself up as, you know, this celebrity guy that's untouchable. And I just enjoy people too much and really view them as my ministry as much as anything else.
Well, and I think that holding on to your family and keep that as a center too would ground you in that way.
No doubt.
Well, the other thing that you said is that, is you mentioned saying no to people, and I had told you in the email that I wanted to ask you about fear.
Yeah.
And so Ricky Anderson, shout out to Ricky.
I love that guy.
He's the one who suggested that I talk to you.
Yeah.
And what he'd said is, he sent me on Twitter, he said, Rob's a pastor who's not afraid to try anything. He's tried skydiving, rapping on stage, you name it. And I thought, yeah, you know, that's really interesting. And I saw that you had written just recently about fear.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, there it is right there. And it was all these things that you said, I actually am afraid of these things. And one of them was, you know, disappointing people, disappointing your wife.
Yeah.
Being judged. And are you, is that something that you're handling, telling people no? And how is that for you?
Yeah.
When these people are like, help me. And you're like, oh, well, I actually can't do that today. I can do that tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. I'm a recovering people pleaser.
Yeah. I saw that.
So, There are some days that I'm great at saying no, and you know, there are other days where I really struggle with it and will double book. And I actually a little selfless plug here. I've written a book that comes out in August called Even If You Were Perfect, Someone Would Crucify You, and it's really about the lessons that I've learned about learning how to find my identity in Jesus and not in pleasing people, because it's addicting. It's addicting to be a people pleaser. The book's just about my journey of really learning how to, and one of the chapters is, you know, learning how to say no. And, that's just kind of been a part of it.
Well, you know, I thought a lot about as soon as Ricky said that, I thought, man, that's a good subject. And I was thinking about some of the things that I would really love to do. that I'm too scared to do. And like, I would love to skydive, but I'm not going to do it. I'll never probably ever do that. And I would love to scuba dive, but I'd probably never do that. And some of them are, and like, and the people that answered on your post, you know, there's a lot of them that are like physical danger things. And, but what it was really interesting is how much more of it was, danger to our self-esteem, our self-worth, our self-image. So like my other one is I would love to do karaoke, but I will never do that because I'm afraid to make a fool of myself.
Right.
And like Ricky said, a big one for me, afraid of, you know, the disapproval of other people.
Yep.
And I saw when you said a recovering, you know, people pleaser, and I guess I was just wondering, you know, what are your other thoughts about all those things where we look to other people to make ourselves feel worthy? Why do we do that?
Yeah. I had a couple thoughts as you're asking the question. A big part of it for me was understanding kind of how the story that people play in God's plan, and learning to not please people is not about not caring what anyone thinks or just dismissing, you know, people altogether. Being the way that I think God has wired us, we need people. And when you really start to understand that God has intentionally created you with some weaknesses that can only be filled by other people. And some examples that I think of is like, you know, I'm not afraid to get up and speak in front of people, but I'm not great with administration. And I need other people that can think through details and systems. And without them, like, it's like the body of Christ is not complete. And so the more that you really start to understand who God has created you to be, and what part you fit in the body, the more comfortable you get with saying, you know what, I'm a hand. God has created me to be a hand, or God has created me to be a mouth, and that's who I am. And if someone makes fun of me because I don't have their giftedness or their talent, really that's just a sign that they don't understand how God's created them to be, because I can't be all things to all people. God didn't create me to be all things to all people. And so when you start to understand how God has created you and really start plugging in into the areas that you are gifted, it really starts to give you some confidence to do some of those things that used to be scary to you.
Well, how do you get started on that? Like, say, for example, I let's take the karaoke. I think that would be fun, but I'm so afraid of the judgment that probably I wouldn't even... I may not even see or hear, you know, because people are mostly kind.
Right.
But how do you in that moment, what are the thoughts that can go through somebody's head that can get them past that?
And different fears are different for different people. So I don't know if there's like just the 100% one size fits all answer for this. A couple thoughts is, for me, like a great fear that I had was running. I hate running. I have no desire to run. But a friend of mine got into running and we started running together, and he talked about signing up for a half marathon. Yeah. And I just told him that was the dumbest thing ever. Like, cause not only are you running a really long time, you have to pay to do it. And I'm like, why am I going to pay $70 to $100 to do something I hate doing, and that I could do for free? Like, this makes no sense. But we really were bonding over running, and I started thinking, you know, I'm not going to let fear is dictating this decision.
Right.
And I'm cutting myself short from something that if other jokers can get out there and run, why can't I run? And so for me to get over that fear, it was signing up for the marathon. Because once I paid for it, there was no turning back, and I was going to do it. And so maybe with the karaoke, it's just jumping in and just doing it. Or you maybe walk it differently, and so maybe it's taking smaller steps. I mean, I know they have karaoke video games. I don't know if your family has a Wii or a PlayStation, but maybe it's getting a game and start getting the confidence to do it around your family, and then do a night where you bring friends and family out to a place that does karaoke and see how it goes. But I think either taking little steps to build up the confidence to do it or just diving in and just saying there's no turning back. Both of those have worked for me to overcome fears.
Now, how come you weren't scared of skydiving?
I don't know. I think the main thing was that I really trusted the fact that you can't go skydiving alone. Your first time, you're going to go tandem. And I just kept thinking to myself, I'm attached to someone that does this professionally for a living and has done this thousands of times, and he doesn't want to die. So he's going to do whatever he can to make sure we land safely. So I'm cool with that. I trust him. So I'm just going to jump and enjoy the ride.
That's good thinking.
It helps, please.
Now, what about rapping on stage? What was all that about?
I used to be on staff at a church. Before I planted a church, I was on staff at a church. And we did a series. We just opened a building, like a new church building. And the series that went along with it was Welcome to the Party. And just kind of welcoming the community to what God was doing there. And so on the opening service, we did a song by, I don't know if you know the artist, Toby Mac, but we did a song called Get This Party Started by Toby Mac, and I did the song. But this was actually one of those things that I probably was just too crazy or too stupid to say no to. there were multiple times when I just had this confidence that, like, I think I can do it. And I didn't know for sure, but it was one of those things that was like, okay, like, if we get there and I'm, it's awful, like, it won't hurt my feelings, we'll never do it again. But, I'm pretty convinced that I can get out there and do this. So, I did it, and then we ended up doing that kind of thing a handful more times because it got a great response.
Well, do you ever get nervous or have fear about any of the sermons that you're going to preach, getting up in front of the congregation?
Yeah, I don't get nervous about a typical, from week to week, I don't get nervous. What makes me nervous is if I ever talk about something that is controversial or if I ever talk about something that I know is a hard subject, me being a people pleaser, it really comes up, and I just start having thoughts of, and it gets really bad. If I'm in the middle of it, someone gets up to, like, go to the bathroom, my brain is thinking, oh, they're leaving. Like, they're leaving the church. I've picked them off. But it's one of those things that, like, I feel like we need to communicate the truth that God has given us, and we do it in a loving way, but there definitely are some times when I get nervous about, I don't know what they're going to hear when I say this.
Right.
Those are times when I get nervous. But on the average week, I don't get nervous speaking anymore.
Well, in reading through your blog, because I had seen your name a lot, and I knew who you were a long time ago, and I had followed you on Twitter. But I hadn't actually been to your blog but a handful of times before this. And as I was reading through the recent post, I was like, man, I can see what people mean about the transparency and the honesty. And I loved the no fear, and I really related to and loved the recent post where you talked about, liking certain types of people, or feeling a more of a connection between certain types of people rather than others. Yeah. And those are hard truths to address about yourself, but it is, I agree with you, it's important to be honest. And when we're honest, we can help other people see that it's not just them.
Yeah.
I have enjoyed reading on your blog recently, and I'm looking forward to your book.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much.
And I was actually going to ask you about the book, but then you brought it up, which was really great. One thing I was wondering is, when did you decide to start writing a book?
I officially decided last April. Well, not the April just passed, the April before that. A big part of it was starting the church. I now was my own boss that I could dictate my schedule. And so because of that, you know, I would carve out time. I would work really hard in the morning, get done at 3 and then write from 3 to 5. Or I would get up, you know, and write in the morning and then work really hard in the afternoon. So I would write probably 2 or 3 times a week. So then, and part of it, again, was this kind of fear thing, too, overcoming it. I had this idea to write a book for years. The event that happened to inspire me to write this book happened at least 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Really?
And I've just kept putting it off and putting it off. And so, yeah, it was really just kind of saying, okay, let's just dive in and do this. And now I'm my own boss, so I can carve out some time.
Well, I'm glad that you did it.
Well, thank you.
Yay. And I'm looking forward to reading that. And it comes out August 1st.
August 1st.
That's right around the corner.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you
August
excited?
1st. I'm really excited. And actually right now on Amazon, you can get the Kindle version of it right now. If you order from Amazon, they'll send it to you and you'll get it in like 2 or 3 days.
Are you kidding? Really?
Yeah. And I don't know how that worked out because... They told me it couldn't be out there till August, but I'm really excited. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And again, just nervous from being a people pleaser because when you have something in print, it's there forever. And so I've seen other blogging friends that I have and other blogs that I follow that they put out something and you know, you put out something and you want people to read it or you know, to like it. But the more people that read it, the more it opens you up to those people that don't like it. And you know, I've said often, like, right now, the Amazon reviews are all from friends and family or church members that kind of have somewhat of a relationship with me. It's going to be interesting to see when people I don't know start reading it, get a hold of Amazon. But even if I wrote the perfect book, someone would crucify it, so I'm okay with it today.
Well, I love the title.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they crucified our Lord, so.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, it's true. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. I hope it wasn't too terrible for you.
Oh, no, it was awesome. It was my honor. Thank you so much.
You're super duper nice, and actually, Ricky said that, too. He said, he'll say yes, and he's so nice.
He puts my niceness to shame, though. Ricky's way nicer than I am.
Ricky is nice. He said that you are... his more interesting twin.
Yeah, we've been pegged that multiple times by people.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's one of the things when before I talked to Ricky, I didn't really have any real questions, and I kept thinking he's so nice, and I was you know, looking around and putting together some questions for you, I thought, you know, everybody just loves Rob. Why does everybody love Rob? He's so nice. And now I'm like, yeah, you are. You're nice. You're wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you. That's encouraging. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thanks for taking time out of your night. And anything else that you want to tell people about? We got the book. Oh, and the website is robshep.com.
Robshep.com, yeah.
And go ahead.
Yeah, no. I think we covered it all. If I will say this, that 100% of the proceeds for the book go to an incredible cause. It goes to help feed needy children, and they're my own. So I would really appreciate it if people would help put food on their table.
That is a good cause. And they're so cute, too. If you want to see the kids in full mustache, you can go to robshep.com and see where your money is going.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you. And that's it. We're done.
Awesome. Thank you so much. You rock.
Oh, thank you. All right. Well, then goodbye. My thanks to Rob Shepherd, who in my head will probably always be Rob Shep. And this is the third time I've had to do this because of that. And if you like to meet other people I almost know, you can subscribe on iTunes, on the Stitcher app, or come to peopleialmostknow.com. You had to say goodbye to me.
Oh, goodbye. I'm sorry. I thought that was... You prepped me before. You prepped me before and told me not to go anywhere after the goodbye. So that's what I thought that was. Goodbye. I'm sorry.
That's so funny.